In the Rambam's introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvos, and we're in the middle of the Ramban's commentary on the second Shoresh. The line is, I guess, page Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. We're about how many lines? Six lines down. The Gamma Rav Modeh. Six of the white lines down. The Gamma Rav Modeh in the regular editions. In the Frankel editions, it's page Nun Zayin, the bottom of the right column. And the point we're discussing is how the Rambam wrote that things that are derived from the 13 laws of derivation are rabbinic, unless we have a specific tradition that this is biblical or that this is a body of Torah. And the Ramban, Nachmanides, had been attacking this concept of the Rambam, showing time and again how things that are derived from the 13 principles are biblical. And now he says, v'gamarav modeh, and the rabbi would also agree, he also admits,
So
he's referring to Maimonides. The rabbi, meaning Maimonides, would also admit, shechayvei malkuyot kulan dvar Torah, that in any situation that you give lashes, that's biblical. And Nachmanides had just pointed out that we give lashes to the rebellious son, to the ben Zoreh Umoreh, from a gzeirah shava, because it says v'yisiru, and it says elsewhere v'yisiru. So v'yisiru indicates lashes, and Maimonides agrees you give lashes, and Maimonides has to agree that's biblical. So then you see what's derived from a gzeirah shava, one of the 13 laws of derivation, is biblical. And we have the following quote from the Bereishis Rabbah, the Medrash Rabbah on Bereishis. Amar Rabbi Acha, Yafa sichat avdei batei avot mitorotam shel banim. The conversation of the servants of the forefathers is more pleasant, is more beautiful before God than the Torah of the descendants. Sharei parshato shel Eliezer, for the story of Eliezer, Avram's servant, going out, loading the donkeys, coming to the well, he makes this condition with himself, then the girl comes and fills the condition, then he goes and tells them how she filled the condition. You have the story repeated twice and three times, parts of the story. It's repeated, Shnaim Shlosha Dafinhi. You have two or three pages encompassing the story of Eliezer, Shna Hiyamura. So the Torah went to great lengths telling you all the details of how he went. He loaded the donkeys, he took 10 donkeys, he went out to the well, he said to God, the girl came out, the girl gave his camels to drink, he ran towards her, asked her whose daughter she is. You have then he puts the nose ring in the earrings, and she runs home and she tells the story, and they come out, and then they bring him in, and they clear the house, and then he tells them the whole story a second time. All these details, two or three pages. And yet, the Asheretz Migufei Torah, and the halacha that Asheretz, one of the eight creepy crawly creatures, when it dies, is defiled, that's one of the bodies of Torah. Then the moment to make Yivsaro, and the concept that the blood of Asheretz does not defile like its flesh, like the body of Asheretz, you don't have that written anywhere in the Torah. Ela meribuy mikra. We have to derive that from a riboy, v'zeh lachem hatameh. It doesn't say zeh, but it says v'zeh, to teach me that the blood is not like the flesh. So I have a halacha I need to know, and the Torah gives me one letter to figure it out from. I have a whole story about a servant, and the Torah goes on, tells me the story. So you see, God obviously loves the stories of the servants, of the forefathers, more than our Torah. So you see here, the Torah, the Medrash says this is the body of Torah, and yet the Medrash says we derive it from a ribui. According to the Rambam, a ribui is the law of derivation. How could it be a halacha? So the Rambam might answer, well, I told you there are exceptions, that when Chazal say it's a body of Torah, that's an exception, then it's biblical, even though it's derived from one of the laws of derivation. That's what we kept saying, that every proof the Ramban brings, the Ramban is stuck, because half the proofs are instances where the Talmud says this is a body of Torah, this is biblical, and the Rambam agrees. Anywhere it says it's biblical, anywhere it says it's a body of Torah, so then the Rambam also agrees it's biblical. And the same is true for the rest of the 13 laws of derivation as well. The Talmud says, when it comes to the 39 prohibited types of work that are prohibited on Shabbos, there are 40 missing one, meaning the 39. They were all learned from a hekesh, from the fact that the Mishkan and Shabbos were aligned with one another. The Talmud tells us in Chagiga, Melechet Machshevet Asrat Torah. The Torah prohibited work only if it's Meleches Machshevet. So you have a biblical concept that the work of Shabbos has to be worked with intent. It can't happen by the way. You have to really want it to happen. The whole concept of Meleches Machshevet. How do I know Meleches Machshevet? From a Hekesh. And yet, this biblical concept is derived from one of the 13 attributes, from what? From a Hekesh. From one of the laws of derivation. According to the Rambam, how did that become biblical? So we'll say, well, the Rambam can answer. You're right. Once they tell me it's Dvar Torah, so the Rambam's fine. The Rambam says, sometimes they do tell me it's Dvar Torah.
What does that mean, sometimes they tell me it's Dvar Torah?
If they have something that's derived from the laws of derivation, and they explicitly say this is biblical, so then Maimonides also agrees it's biblical. That's why the Ramban, every time he's going to prove something's biblical, even though it's derived from the law of derivation, so the Rambam's simple answer would be, well, I told you that if they say so, it is.
So if the rabbis say, we do this from the law of derivation, and it's biblical, then
right.
It's okay.
Right, but we accept it either way. The question is it biblical, or is it divrei sofrim?
Right, right.
Okay. ומצינו להם מדרש כזה שלהיג בו הרב על בעל ההלכות מן האתים. And we have a medrash that our sages quote, that Baal Halachos Gadol, Rav Yehudai Gaon, gave great weight to, and Maimonides mocks the way Rav Yehudai Gaon enumerates mitzvos because of this medrash. Amru b'gmar Sukkah. The Talmud tells us in Sukkah, Chatzitzin d'oraita ninu, that the concept that when a person immerses himself in a mikvah, we have biblical immersions. A woman, every time she becomes tahor from her nida, from her period, that's biblical bisman hazeh. Men bisman hazeh don't really have biblical immersions, but in the days of the temple, so then they would also have to immerse themselves biblically for Pesach and other things. So we have a concept that if there's anything that's on the body, so that the water does not come in full contact with the body, or the full body doesn't come in contact with the water of the mikvah, that's called a chatzitza, something that separates between the body and the water. So this concept of chatzitza, the Gemara over there says, chatzitzin do'aita ninu. It's biblical. We have halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai about chatzitzin. The Gemara over there says three things are halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. Chatzitzin, Mechitzin, and I don't remember the third. Chatzitzin, Mechitzin, and Shiurim, I think. Around Halachah Moshe Sinai. So we know Chatzitza is supposed to be Halachah Moshe Sinai. Then the Talmud says, no, it's biblical. So then what do I need the Halachah Moshe Sinai for? The Gemara says, Ki atai hilchata. So why do I need Halachah Moshe Sinai? Lesaro, to tell me that a Chatzitza in the here also constitutes a Chatzitza. The Talmud questions, that's also biblical. If you try to go to the mikveh and you have glue in your hair, or something else, you have gum in your hair, that's a biblical chatzitza. It says he should rinse his flesh in the water. And we say, et bisaro is coming to teach me et hatafel libsaro, to encompass that which is secondary to the flesh. Umayninu, what is that? Saro? That's his hair. That the hair also must be completely immersed in the water. And if the hair is not completely immersed because of a chatzitza, so then midoraisa, biblically, that doesn't constitute a kosher tevila. Umitaretz.
So I learned that up.
Oh, so it seems that the Ramban is learning that the Gemara derived it from the word et. That the et is the ribuy. That's what it seems.
The Rambam.
Ramban, Nachmanides. is learning that Gemara that the hair was learned from the word et. And he's coming to attack back the Rambam, who attacked Baal Halachos Gedolos for enumerating among the mitzvos some mitzvos that were derived from the word et. So the Ramban says, well, there's a Gemara that says that things derived from the word et, that those things are biblical. Here, you see, the Gemara says the hair is biblical. You don't need Halacha Moshe Misinai for it, because it says et b'saro. We haven't yet explained it. Because that's the Gemara's question. Okay. If I have it derived from the pasuk, so now what do I need the Halacha Moshe Misinai for?
All right. Okay. This seems to make some sense to ask the question the other way. Confused why that. If we say it's Halacha Moshe Misinai, why do we need to derive it from that? Other than if we say it's derived from that, why do we need it?
That's a great question. It's an excellent question. Remember the question. Hold on to the question, and as you learn, you will form a perspective on Halacha Moshe Misinai. I know it deserves a whole class about Halacha Moshe Misinai. You're right in the question. We would think, if you have Halacha Moshe Misinai, what do you need a pasuk for? You see that that's not the Gemara's approach. And the fact that you see it's not the Gemara's approach, that teaches you something about Halacha Moshe Misinai. You're assuming that Halacha Moshe Misinai is before Torah. It seems, okay, we'll go off on this tangent for a minute, just a point to ponder, meaning you won't understand this completely yet, but as you learn, you'll see how to apply this concept. It seems that the way the Gemara envisioned Torah is as follows. Logic, Torah, Halacha Moshe Misinai. Meaning, the Gemara will sometimes say, Lama likra svaro, what do I need a pasuk for? Logic dictates that. So you see that to the Talmud, logic comes before Torah. Things that are logical, I don't need a pasuk for.
Like, don't murder?
You're close. Like the Gemara says on Habala Horgo Hashkim Lahorgo. If someone comes to kill you, you kill him first. If it's your life or his life. So Habala Horgo Hashkim Lahorgo, there is a pasuk for. But the idea that you should rather give up your life than kill someone else, so the Gemara says, that's logic. What, by what right do you take his life to save your life? Not a Baal HaChashkin Lohorgo, but rather that if it's either kill someone or get killed, so then the Gemara says, that's logic. And obviously, well, how could you take someone's life to save your own? My chazit, the Damach Samik Tvei, the Gemara says, why do you think your blood's any redder than his?
We just learned that in Zachar.
Okay, so you see, the Gemara's approach is that logic comes first. Things I can derive logically, I don't need a pasuk for. Then pasuk, then Halacha Moshe Misinai. Now, Halacha Moshe Misinai, it's a big discussion. Machlokas Rishonim, do we treat it like Doraisa or Drabana? Safek Halacha Moshe Misinai. L'chomer or L'kula? That's a big discussion. How's your Hebrew? I gave a class on it in Hebrew, but it's... No, maybe not yet. You could try. So in the class, there's a series in special classes Hebrew. For me, special classes Hebrew, so there's a series called the Ptichat Kolelet of the Prim Gadim. Ptichat Kolelet of the Prim Gadim, where the Prim Gadim discusses that. One second, guys. Sorry.
Put me up some more.
Huh?
Tichat, yeah. Tichat.
Can you make a deal? Yeah. I got something.
Shalom, Zev. What can I do for you?
I want to see what it'd be like to be on national television.
Officially, it goes to 10 o'clock. May go to 10:15. No, it's not like that. Okay. Yeah, you can come into the thingy. it's like yeah, I do. Can you come to the Beit Midrash after your Shmira?
Okay, yeah? I'm back.
Okay. Petichat
Kolelet.
Kolelet.
Yeah. Pre-Megadim is the one who wrote it. Petichat Kolelet. So over there we have a class on this. Yeah.
The Ramban is saying here, is arguing, why did the rabbis look for this in the Pesukim if they have it from Halacha in Moshe Sinai?
No. The Gemara has a tradition that the concept of Mechitza is Halacha Moshe Sinai. So the Gemara says, well, the basic concept of Chatzitza I know from a Pasuk. It says the whole body has to be in the mikvah water, so it can't be that. I don't need Allah Moshe Mizinai for it. I have a pasuk. So the Gemara offers, maybe it's there to teach me that the hair, not only the body has to be in the mikvah, the hair as well, that if there's a chatzitza in the hair, that disqualifies the tefillah. So the Gemara counters and says, no, I know the hair from the pasuk es bisaro, and I don't need Allah Moshe Mizinai. That's biblical. Says the Ramban, you see from the Gemara's train of thought, that a ribui from the word es is biblical. What's the Rambam taking the Baal Halachas Gedolos to task for es Hashem Elokecha tira l'rabos tamidei chachamim and other drushes of es, which Baal Halachas Gedolos enumerates as biblical mitzvos? He says the Gemara says that that which is derived from the word es is biblical. When the Gemara is searching, what do I need the Halacha Moshe Mizinai for? The Gemara says, well, I don't need it for a regular chatzitza because that's a pasuk. I don't need it for your hair because that's from es bisaro.
I have two questions. One,
you were stopping mid thought, but I'm with you.
One, they seem not to know what this halacha is. Just a general idea.
Correct.
So what does that mean? That they have
later? We'll get back to it. I'm sorry to cut you off. Let's just finish this gemara. What else?
And also, I was just wondering. Who says that just because there's a riboy doesn't mean that there's not also Allah from Moshe Mizinai? I mean,
the assumption is you don't have Allah from Moshe Mizinai for that which you know without it.
Okay, but doesn't I'm sorry, I was just reading the intro to Mishnah and I thought it says there that even though they have the halacha, they look for it in the psukim. Meaning that even though there is halacha in Moshe Mizinai, they also look for such halacha in the psukim in order to attach a Torah, the Torah, the written Torah to it, or a drush from the written Torah.
So let's get back to that. In a minute, we'll discuss what the Rambam says there, I think. Let's get back to that, okay?
Okay.
Let's just, because we're stopping mid-thought, and it's hard enough to follow without. Remind me to get back to those two points, please. I'll explain the next line in the Gemara before we read it inside, because he's going to quote the bottom line of the Gemara, which you guys might as well know. So the Gemara says, okay, so what do I need the Halacha Moshe Mizinai for? So the Gemara answers that from the Torah I would know that the body has to be in the mikvah, and if anything is separating between the body and the mikvah, that disqualifies it, and the same goes for the hair. But I wouldn't know another concept, and that is that in order for something to constitute a chatzitza, in order for something to disqualify the tevila, because it's in the way between the body and the mikvah waters, it has to have two qualifying factors, meaning, or disqualifying factors to disqualify the tevila. It has to have 2 points. Number one, it has to encompass most of the body, so you need a guy who's really covered with mud. And number two, it has to be something you don't want on your body. So if a guy smears himself with oil before going to the mikvah, but he wants that oil there, so most of his body is covered with oil. And his body, the oil doesn't come off easily. You know, he puts on this waterproof cream, suntan lotion, and then he goes into the mikvah. So then we'd say, biblically, even though most of his body is covered, but he wants it there, so then biblically that doesn't disqualify the tefillah. Yeah. That's what the Halacha Moshe Mizinai taught me.
And this rule for all kinds of tefillah?
One second. Yes. So biblically, I need rubo, most of the body to be encompassed, umaktib, and for you not to want it there. Rabbinically, the rabbi said, if you have rubo, most of the body covered, meino makpid, and you don't care if it's there, or miut, a small part of the body, umakpid, and you do care that it's there, meaning you have a guy who has a little bit of mud on his nose, he wouldn't want that there. It doesn't encompass his whole body. Most of his body is not covered with mud. But being that he wouldn't want it there, so we say even though it's a miut, but it has the other qualifying factor, it is makpid, so that is a chatzitza. Midrabanan. And this applies to every tevila, as we said before.
So someone with gel in their hair can go to mikvah?
No.
They want it there. It's miut.
You're saying that's miut ve'no makpid. So we do today, the way we do today, taking me on a long ride. You're talking about men's mikveh, do whatever you want, there's no such halacha. You could go to mikveh however and whenever you want. You're talking about a mitzvah to go to mikveh, like a ger or a woman when she does her tevilah. So then there are two points. Now you're taking me for a ride. Point number one is that we are machmir not to leave anything on. We take off scabs. We don't leave anything. Even if a woman says, I don't care that it's there, we say, no, anything you could get out, you get out. Anything that's reasonable to get out, you get out. You don't leave it on. You don't leave on dry skin. Women don't leave on anything. But, for the sake of accuracy, we discussed makpid, something that a person doesn't want there, like a little bit of mud on his face. And ain't no makpid. He doesn't care if it's there. Mr. Frankel raised the third type of situation, and that is he wants it there. And when he wants it there, so then sometimes that's even better, and even rabbinically you're allowed to leave it. And that's why women who dye their hair don't have to take out the dye when they go into the mikvah. Why don't they have to take it off? A woman polishes her nails. So there are some neighborhoods where, in order to encourage the women to go to mikvah, they have beauty parlors in the mikvah, where they'll do their hair and do their nails and do a whole bunch of things so that the woman comes out looking gorgeous, and preferably we do it after she comes out of the mikvah, but where we have no choice, we'll do it even beforehand, because we say there's a difference between eino makpid and I want it there. Now this is a big kula. We don't lechatchila do this, but there are situations where the women aren't going to come without it. There are communities where they realize that they need this. So then this is a leniency that when consulted, when you consult with the rabbi, there will be times that the rabbi will apply it that will say, she wants it there, so you leave it there. But the basis is that the halacha, the Moshe Misinai teaches me. That's the bottom line of the Gemara, even though it's not relevant to us. But our whole point in our learning here is to get a whole bunch of information as we learn. So the bottom line of the Gemara is that the halacha, the Moshe Misinai teaches us that biblically, it has to be rubo umakpid. And rabbinically, they prohibited rubo veno makpid or muto veken makpid.
Where does this come from?
One second, he's waiting, yeah.
Yeah, what about someone that has a tattoo?
No problem, it's under the skin.
It's under the skin?
Yeah.
Even if you don't want it there, maybe you regret it.
To the best of my knowledge, it's not a problem.
Where does this come from? If you're saying that rabbinically there's something, and then now you're saying that there's something more, but where is this coming from? That you're saying we're makpid to get rid of everything. Okay, so we're makpid. What is that? A minhag? And you're saying that if you don't do that, then it's not kosher?
That's too much. It's a good question, but it's too long a discussion.
That's for local Orthodox.
No. When you learn the sugyas of mikveh, then you'll start understanding why we do this and why we don't do that, and when do we say it's not a kosher tefillah, and when don't we say it's not, that's not our regulachas. I mean, that's already going into details, which you really have to learn. I mean, there are a lot of details here.
What masechet is this?
This is in Nida and Mikvos, primarily, but it's also in Sukkah over there. That's where the Gemara really discusses the Chatzitza. Mm-hmm. And really, the majority of what was written is written in the Rishonim and in the Shulchan Aruch and the commentaries.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So it's later, Latter-day stuff.
A lot of it, yeah. Part of it, you see, the basis is in the Gemara. But the rabbinic part is in the Gemara. Our custom to take off everything is very early, but much of it comes from after the Gemara. It starts with the period of the Gaonim, where there were Gaonim who had wives who were young girls, and they didn't want to really do take off everything. And they were just a little bit lazy. And then the Gaonim had an issue where their own wives were not meticulous in really preparing for mikveh in a way where it would disqualify the mikveh. And that's where things started evolving, where they saw that this is a difficult thing to do. So if you're going to start telling a person, well, it depends on if you want it or you don't want it, then you could really run into trouble, because a woman's going to say, I don't care if it's there. But really she would care, but it's just a lot of work. So then they started saying they have to do things differently.
Sounds like what we were discussing.
Yeah, but they have to learn it. It's a long thing, meaning... Okay, so I'm oversimplifying it.
Thank you.
Back to our Ramban. I said they were young wives because they were really little girls. And they were like 12, 13, 14-year-old girls, their wives.
My great-grandmother was 9 years old.
Wow. Okay, look, Cleopatra was 14 when the world was in an uproar over here. Back in the day, that was a norm. Don't forget, people lived till 20, 30, 40. How long did people live? Then they died of gum disease or anything. They didn't have antibiotics. Back to our Ramban. But, at the end of the day, a 12-year-old isn't necessarily going to be as meticulous about cleaning herself, you know. Uvigmal Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin Nunal from Adbezi.
You see where it is?
Again, every proof the Ramban is going to bring, so the Rambam could easily answer. Well, I told you there are exceptions. So,
what does that mean? Everything's an exception?
I mean, the Rambam said there are exceptions. He said if the Talmud tells you it's an exception, it's an exception. So the Ramban is a little bit caught in a bind. Every proof he's going to bring isn't really a strong proof, because the Rambam could always answer. I said there were exceptions. You know,
it's not really a rule if there's so many exceptions.
His rule was, when the Talmud tells you otherwise, it's otherwise. The Ramban brought all of 8 exceptions, you know, there's not so many exceptions.
And these were the ones that the Ramban has brought.
So how do you
say so far? He could say, I'm saying that the Ramban was after the Ramban, I'm just saying. Earlier, the Ramban brought knockout proofs, proofs where Yehuda would keep saying, well, how could the Ramban answer such a strong proof? Now, I'm just saying, this isn't such a strong proof. I'm saying that the Rambam's answer is easy.
Right.
I maybe the Rambam had better answers. I'm just saying, even a little guy like me could read the Ramban and say, well, the Rambam could easily answer that.
It's difficult to say. When do you establish a rule? When do you say this is all just exceptions?
Okay. Uvigmal Sanhedrin Shanu. The Talmud tells us in Sanhedrin. Amale Rabbi Akiva. Yishmael achi bat vebat ani doresh. Rabbi Akiva said to Rabbi Ishmael, he says, brother, I darshan the word bat that's written in both places. Amar levechim mipnei she'ata doresh bat vebat notzi zo l'sreifa. He said to him, this has no source. You darshan it. You want to kill someone because you darshan it? Ulefi she'ya lashon hazeh kemistapek beribuy hazeh lotzi mimenu ha'isha l'sreifa. Shalu b'gemara, hay bat v'bat Rabbi Ishmael may darish bei, lebaile lechiditani avu ad Rabbi Avin lechulu. Okay, I gotta look up the Gemara. I don't remember which relative this is talking about over there. One second. It says in Sanhedrin, Nun Aleph on the base.
Okay.
Okay. It says in the pasuk, "Ubatish kohen ki techel is not et avia imchalelet beesh tisaref." The daughter of a kohen, if she commits adultery, so then she gets the death penalty of burning. Ordinarily, a woman who commits adultery gets the death penalty of stoning. So the daughter of a kohen, it says, she gets the death penalty of burning. The question is, who are we talking about? A girl that's engaged. That's the simple reading. That's what Rabbi Yishmael learns. Rabbi Akiva says, no, even if she was married when she committed adultery, same thing. She gets an exceptional, this exceptional death penalty. So Rabbi Yishmael says, just because it says, how do you know? Rabbi Akiva says, because it says, uvat, and the daughter. Why does it say that, Bob? Uvat ish kohen, and the daughter of a kohen. To tell me not only the daughter of a kohen who's engaged, but that and is to encompass another daughter of a kohen, the daughter of a kohen, who's already married and commits adultery. So Rabbi Yishmael says back to Rabbi Akiva, just because you want to say bat, ubat, you're going to give her this death penalty? So the Ramban says, ולפי שהיה הלשון הזה כמסתפק בריבוי הזה להוציא ממנו האישה לשריפה, being that it sounded like Rabbi Yishmael didn't accept Rabbi Akiva's drasha to administer this death penalty. Shalu b'gmara, so the Talmud over there asks, okay, so you, Rabbi Yishmael, you don't want to use that vav to learn this halacha. It says ubat, you don't want to use that vav of ubat to encompass even a married daughter. So then, hi bat ubat Rabbi Yishmael my darish bey. So what does Rabbi Yishmael do with that extra vav? Why does the Torah say ubat ish kohen? Answers the Gemara, Mibayle lechaditane avod Rabbi Yavin, he used it for a different drasha. Lomar, what the Talmud's telling me over there is, She'im lo haya lo midrash acher badavar, that if Rabbi Yishmael did not have a different tradition about what to do with that vav, if he didn't have a different drasha, something else to derive from that riboy, then haya av Rabbi Yishmael suref otamidin riboy zeh, Rabbi Yishmael too would give her this death penalty because of that vav. Rambam, you're telling me when there's a ribu, it's not biblical. Everyone in that Gemara agrees that it's biblical. The only question is, do you use it biblically for this, or Rabbi Yishmael use it for something else? But you see, Rabbi Akiva is willing to give the death penalty because of the ribu. Even though, you see, Rabbi Yishmael didn't have a tradition that this type of girl should get that death penalty, but he had to do a riboy. The pasuk says above, and if he has a riboy, he has to use it for something. So you see that the riboy is so important that if you don't have what to do with it, then even if you don't have the tradition, you got to go through Rabbi Akiva and learn it his way. You can't just leave it hanging. According to the Rambam, what's the big deal? Divrei Sofrim, Ayna, Eri, you know, it's it says the Ramban, what do you mean? No, you see the Gemara says if Rabbi Yishmael doesn't have a different tradition what to do with that letter, that ribuy, then he's going to have to learn like Rabbi Akiva. Again, the Ramban could answer the same answer he's answering all the time.
Did Rabbi Akiva have a tradition on this?
Well, that's a good question. That's an excellent question. The Ramban seems to say he did. That's what the Ramban seems to say.
So what is Rabbi Yishmael saying? That he doesn't, I don't have a tradition, you have a tradition, but I'm going to come up with something else.
That's for when we learn the Gemara.
Okay,
that's
fine.
Yeah.
And also, Rambam, who's saying that it's Divrei Sofrim, who would say it was Divrei Sofrim and not the writer. He would be saying that someone can. The implication is that someone could make a riboy or a more severe death from a rabbinical.
No, no one would say that. Impossible. No such concept. You can't give any death penalty midrabanan.
Right.
Shouldn't say any, but the general assumption is
this has to be the right.
Right?
So they're figuring out what the death penalty
right?
is. Right? So, okay.
וכן אמרו, the Talmud also says, בן עזאי אומר מחשפה לא תחיה. בן עזאי says, it says in the Pasuk, you don't leave a witch alive. ונאמר, כל שוכן בהמה מות יומת. And then the Torah says, anyone who sleeps with an animal gets a death penalty. סמפו עניין לא. Why are these two juxtaposed? לומר לך, to teach you, מה שוכן בהמה בסקילה, just like he who sleeps with an animal, intimately, gets the death penalty of skila, stoning, אף מחשבה בסקילה, so too the witch gets skila. אמר לרב יהודה, רב יהודה says back to בן עזאי, ומכי מפני שסמכו עניין לא נוציא זו לסקילה, just because the Torah puts these two psukim one after another, you're going to give this מחשבה, the death penalty of skila, ופירושו בגמר מי שמתו, and in order to understand this Gemara, you have to know, the Gemara says in Brachos, in the beginning of the third chapter, Rabbi Yehuda lo darish smuchim, that Rabbi Yehuda didn't have this tradition that when you have two psukim juxtaposed, that teaches you halacha and all of Torah other than the book of Devarim. Kolomar she'en lo kabbalah b'midrash amidah zot. He didn't have a tradition that you use this law of derivation in the Torah, but Torah. Shilu haya doresh otah, if he had this tradition. Haya modeh b'skilat ha-machshev kefi ha-midrash, then he would have agreed to this derivation. So that's what the Gemara tells us there in Brachos. V'shu doresh otam b'mishne Torah. But he does have a tradition to darshan smuchim in the book of Devarim, what's called Mishne Torah. U'lefichach hu oser anusat aviv u'mfutat aviv u'mevi ota bichlal chayvei lavim. And that's how Rabbi Yehuda knows from the smuchim, from the juxtaposition of psukim and Devarim, that one is prohibited from marrying a woman who his father raped or seduced, even though technically the Torah only prohibits marrying a father's wife. She wasn't technically his wife. Nonetheless, from the smukim, from the juxtaposition of the psukim, we derive that that's also prohibited, and that's also a lav. It's one of the chai be'lamin. Although Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the bottom line, that a mechashefa gets the death penalty of skila, but he has to bring it from a different derivation. מדבר שיהיה בכלל יצא מן הכלל ללמד, לא ללמד על עצמו יצא, אלא ללמד על הכלל כולו יצא. This is a law of derivation that says the following. If I have a rule, I have 30 guys in Masa. And one guy goes into the Masa office, and they give him a special backpack filled with all kinds of goodies. So everyone else in Masa figures I'm going to get one too, right? We say, davar shaya bichlal. If you have something that's in a general rule, ve'yatzam min haklal, and then it came out of the general rule, lelamed, it taught me something. Lo lelamed al atzmo yatzah. It's not only teaching about itself. Lelamed al haklal kulo yatzah. It's teaching about everything. If the Torah tells us a list of prohibitions and then tells me a detail about one of them, so if they're all included in one canopy of prohibitions, so then the Torah is telling me not only about that one, it's telling me about the whole rule. And we assume that when you have a general, like the Torah says, the following women you're prohibited from marrying. And then it says, and this one, if you do, you get this type of death penalty. So you understand, it's not only that one, it's the whole rule. The Torah often uses this rule. You have a generalization with a bunch of details, and then one of those details has a specific halacha, and we say it's coming to teach me that you all have that halacha. So Rabbi Yehuda uses that to teach me that a mechashefa gets stoning. However he does it, you'll learn the Gemara there. So technically he agrees, bottom line, that the mechashefa also gets stoning. Everyone agrees. He just says, you can't give her that death penalty just because these two psukim are one next to the other. He didn't have that tradition that we darshan that in the whole Torah, only in the book of Devarim. Amar, what Rabbi Yehuda over there says is, Ela'ov v'yidoni b'chlal mechashvin hayu. There are two types of sorcery called ov and yidoni. Meaning the Torah gives us a general prohibition, don't do sorcery. Then the Torah gives me details. It tells me, don't do ov, don't raise the dead. Don't do yidoni, don't use the special animal to figure out the future. So, and if you do, you get skila. So you had a generalization, don't do sorcery. Then it didn't specify which death penalty. Then it told you two types of sorcery that get the death penalty of skila. So that teaches me about all types of sorcery, that you get the death penalty of skila. That's how Rav Yehuda derives it. So these two were singled out to teach me, just as these two get the death penalty of skila, so to all other types of mechashvin get the death penalty of skila. So what's the Ramban's point? The Ramban's point is, you know, you could use these laws of derivation for death penalties. They're all biblical. Yeah.
Just a little off topic.
So let's not do it now. Let's move forward a little bit. And I still have to get back to your question before. We forgot. Okay.
Whenever you have a chance.
So when we get to the next, when we conclude one topic. Okay? And over there, in the Talmud in Brachos, in the third chapter called Mishamito, Hayud Danin, Shemvarech Adam al Amazon. Okay, so that's, or this is already a new topic. So, yeah, let's go to your two questions. He's about to bring another proof against Maimonides. From that, the Gemara in Brachos there. Yeah, what were you asking? Remind me.
I said that they seem to treat Halacha Moshe Mishnah as this was something that can't be found in the Torah. But I was reading the introduction to Mishnah that they do look for dafka for these halachot in the Torah.
What does the Rambam say?
What does the Rambam say?
He says this is to show the wisdom of the pasuk, that you can find allusions in the pasuk to things that are not really from the Torah. So allusions, yeah, we can find the smachtas. It's not that it's derived from there. You couldn't derive it from there. If you didn't have the Halacha Moshe Mishnah, you couldn't derive it. The Rambam says it there. It's a way of showing, look, you can find the hint. This is within the...
Not a vav or something like that.
No.
More of a remnant.
Right.
Okay.
And when you learn more, you'll see that what I just said is wrong. Right.
They didn't know what
meaning it's more complicated. We're oversimplifying it, but for now we'll have to leave it at no.
Okay. So they didn't know what the halacha was exactly. There was some
the halacha Moshe Sinai.
There was on this topic. That was
right. Right. It's worse than that. Meaning it's even less clear than you're saying. And that we can see right now. Let's see if I can find it. Can I use your Rambams? I'll have an easier time.
I know this page a little bit better than this page. This is
Truth is, this will boggle your mind. So I'm not sure I should boggle your mind tonight. It's not a good idea.
Rather, that's how you get stronger, by working the brain muscle. That's what Rav Krupnik said.
Yeah, but some things are just too confusing. So remind me, when we finish this Ramban,
okay,
we have to come back and see, I think we mentioned this earlier, we have to come back and see a commentary called the Kinnah Sofer on this. And he comes back and he starts calling the shots between the Rambam and Ramban. A very, very interesting commentary. And one of the things he discusses is, according to the Rambam, how does Halacha Moshe Mishnah really work? Along the lines of what you're asking. I'm not finding it right now. He ends up having a bunch of rules. He says, Nimtzenu Limidim. Turns out, according to the Rambam, you have the following conclusions you could come up with after having learned the Rambam. And then he has a whole long list of some mind-boggling conclusions. One of which is about Halacha Moshe Mishnah. Hmm. If you ever quote it without having the text in front of you, people will tell you you're a heretic.
Okay.
So you gotta have your sources.
That's no, very true. You need the Bar-Ilan CD with you at all times.
Well, you gotta have it inside. Now you guys have to know it. Where is it? Okay, well, Mitzvashem, I hope, here we go. You see, on page Lamed Aleph, he has a list. Nimtzenu Limedim. Page Lamed Aleph. It says, now, turns out from the Rambam, we have the following rules.
What's the...
Page Lamed Aleph, in the Kinat Soflim.
Yeah.
Go down, Kinat Soflim, and then you see the Aleph base.
Yeah.
Nimtzenu Limedim. You see, on top of it, he says, so it turns out, from the Rambam, we can come up with the following conclusions. This is how he boils down the Rambam. Page Lamed Aleph. And now look at Dalid, but I shouldn't really show you this, because no one else says it. It's a really radical thing he says in the Rambam. And I don't know how this works with what the Rambam himself says in the introduction to Mishnah and in other places. But this is how he feels the Rambam boils down.
Where is he getting this the deduction?
He's been writing a lot.
Right, so
you got to learn it.
It's based off of this word.
Yeah. It's basically he's taking the Rambam. That's what he's writing. You know, this is a long essay. It's right. like as long as the Ramban. Yeah,
have you checked? Have you compared it to what the Rambam says? You know,
I don't see how. I don't see how. But Rav Pesin Zatzal did think this was something worth quoting. He. So you'll learn letter Dalit on your own time. Now we're
my own time? Why? We used it so short.
No, we'll no, no. So you can do it. Okay.
Wait, can you just tell me who this was? The Kinat
Soflim? I don't know. I'm embarrassed to say. I don't know. Who was the Kinat Soflim? Rav Hananya Kozis. I remember. I don't know who he is. Okay, back to our Ramban.
Last question. Rabbi Yehuda, does he not hold the two psukim together you can darshan from because he doesn't hold, because he holds in muktam and yochar the Torah, even in one inyan?
I don't think so.
Okay. I was just wondering because I remember hearing once there was one person who holds that he holds the opposite, that there's always muktam or something like that. So I was wondering because. That's kind of the...
Maybe you're confusing the machlokas Ramban and Ibn Ezra? And when we can apply in Mukdam Mukhab Torah, could that be?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with it.
Okay.
But that's very interesting because we learned the Sugim Psachim and there's a whole bunch of problems with Rashi himself in his comments. So I'm glad to see that there's people discussing it. Maybe we can figure out what the answer is.
Okay, back to our Ramban. V'sham b'gmal mishemito. You have it? V'sham b'gmal mishemito. So over there, the Talmud in Brachos, lefanav midin kal v'chomer. The Talmud says, well, maybe we should say that you have to make a blessing before eating bread from a kal v'chomer. V'ayalem ze min haTorah. And the Talmud says, well, if it would be a kal v'chomer, then it would be biblical. V'ikshu aleam imamaram. So then the Talmud says, well, how could it be that making a blessing before eating bread is biblical? We have a Mishnah that says, Balkeri, Mimamaram Bibalkeri, when the Mishnah says about a person who's a Balkeri, Balamazon Mibrech Lacharav, Eino Mibrech Lefanav, that he only does what he really must do, the bare minimum, so he makes a blessing after eating, but not before eating. And so the Gemara says, Tiyufta, okay, that's a knockout proof. Ritzonam Lomar, what the Talmud over there is saying is, that making a blessing before eating bread is rabbinic. And the only thing that's biblical is making a blessing after eating bread. And the Gemara says, he who wanted to derive a kal v'chomer here is disproved. Because if you had this kal v'chomer, then it would be biblical. According to the Rambam, not every kal v'chomer is biblical, right? So this maybe is a really strong proof. Maybe saying that the Gemara over there seems to say, if you have a kal v'chomer, then it has to be biblical. And the Ramban says, why? According to the Rambam, not every kal v'chomer has to be biblical.
What is a balkari?
Balkari? The Torah describes when a person will be defiled mikirei laila, from an occurrence of the night. And Mikirei Laila, an occurrence of night, is a clean way of describing that he has an emission, or he was with his wife. Doesn't have to be an omission that was by mistake. But the Torah refers to it in a modest way and calls it Mikirei Laila, from the occurrence of the night. And because of that, we call anyone who's Tamei from that a Baal Keri. In the days of Ezra, Ezra wanted to encourage the rabbis to spend less time being intimate. He said they might be like roosters always pecking around their wife. So, of course, he wanted them to be with their wife a normal amount of time, but not more than that. And he felt that they need an added push not to do it more than they should. So he said that he made an institution that anyone who's a Baal Keri may not read Torah or say blessings, only the minimum, what he's got to do biblically. He's got to go to mikvah. And it didn't work. Meaning, I guess he knew why he needed it, right? But they didn't live up to it. They did away with that institution. Now, he didn't invent this. He just said, just like when we received the Torah, people had to be pure. And so too here. And it's not only an issue of purity, it's also a level of seriousness, where Chazal expected that when a couple is together, there's a level of frivolity, and that's the normal way it should be. And Chazal said that you gotta have a certain level of seriousness and consistent seriousness to really learn Torah. The Talmud describes that rabbis would be focused on a point for a week straight. They'd be thinking something through. Remember, their Torah was all oral Torah. So that's like figuring out pi 100 places after the decimal point. You gotta keep back and forth, right? So that's what they were doing. And Rava says, if my mother would ask me to pass the butter at the breakfast table, that's it. You ruined my concentration for the week.
Yeah, right.
Okay, that's the level of concentration they were on. That Abaye could be focused on a Gemara, and he's sitting on his thumbs, and his thumbs are bleeding, and he doesn't notice. His weight on his thumbs caused him to bleed, and he doesn't notice because he's so focused on what he's doing. We don't have such. We don't begin to understand what that means. But okay, so Ezra said if they really want to learn, then they need to be serious enough, and they wanted to make this institution. Okay, it seems from the Gemara that it wasn't Ezra's invention, that from the days of the giving of the Torah, the really pious, the really learned, would be doing this anyways. When the verse describes one of King David's warriors who went down in the snow and fought and killed a lion. So the Talmud says one interpretation is it was a wintry day and the lake was frozen over and he was Tamei Keri. I guess his wife must have gone to mikveh the night before, or it was Friday night. He had a biblical mitzvah to be with his night. So the next morning he wanted to learn Torah. So he went and cut out a little circle in ice. I went and dunked in the river so he could go learn Torah. So you look at that Gemara and you say, that was King David's time. What's the problem? Who needs to go to mikveh? You can learn Torah. Ezra only lived a millennium later. Well, why not? So you see from that Gemara that already in King David's time, I guess from the time of the giving of the Torah, the really pious were careful about this. I guess. Or wherever he lived. Maybe he lived in the Hermon. We don't know. Ela says the Ramban, but kol anilmad lachachamim biyud gimel midot Torah. This is bottom line. Anything that comes out of the 13 laws of derivation is biblical. So that's his point against the Ramban. Now, as the Ramban always does, he says, but the great but, where he suddenly seems to go back towards the Ramban. But yeshim amidot elu tnaim. There are conditions to these laws of derivation. And the condition of Gzera Shava, where we say this word appears here and it appears there. So you say that the concept is shared. There are shared laws between the two places that the same word appears. So the rule over there is Shena Damdan Gzera Shava Me'atzmo. A person cannot learn Gzera Shava on his own, unless he learned it from his Rebbe. You can't just die. You can destroy the whole Torah if you try to do it on your own. But says the Ramban, and this is where I differ from the Rambam. Once you have a tradition, so you learn Gzera Shava, then it becomes Torah. You don't need any special indication. Any Gzera Shava that's valid is Torah, biblical. b'tnai akal v'chomer, and the conditions of a kal v'chomer. Kal v'chomer, you could say on your own. You don't need a tradition. It's logic. If you see kal v'chomer, you could say it. But we do have other conditions. She'en onshin bo, what the Talmud says, en onshin min hadin. You cannot punish from a kal v'chomer. That's a tradition we have. Although kal v'chomer is true and it's logical, the Torah will never administer a punishment that has to be derived from a kal v'chomer. Lo malkot de'lo mitat bet din. You cannot administer the punishment of lashes or any death penalty. Ve'etzrichu b'ze midrash min ha-katuv, k'mo shumvar b'gmar makot. The Talmud derives this concept from a verse that teaches us that you can't punish from kal v'chomer. The Gemara in Makos proves it from Psukim. Had we not had this pasuk that teaches us that you can't punish and you can't kill just because you derived it from a kal v'chomer, if not for that, we would even punish and kill from a kal v'chomer. So really, that's again, he's banging home his point. Kal v'chomer, law of derivation, means it's true, it's Torah. It has this special string attached, which is you can't punish from it. You can't give the death penalty from it. Umefurash amu b'gmar Sanhedrin, and the Talmud explicitly states in Sanhedrin, El arodef achacha v'ro leogo nitan atzilo ben nafsho, if someone's chasing after his friend, to kill him. So you're allowed to kill the guy who's chasing. What's that called in English?
Self-defense.
No, the guy who's chasing is called attempted murder. Well, there's a better word for it. The hitman.
No, hitman is somebody who's hired.
Okay.
You mean the guy who's trying to kill him?
Yeah, what difference does it make?
Okay.
The aggressor. Okay. So the guy who's attempting to kill, you're allowed to kill him. How do you know that? The Talmud asks. Minala. How do you know it? The Talmud says, it says a girl that was engaged and someone comes to rape her. So then it's not her fault because she yelled and no one could save her. It's like someone who leaps on his friend and kills him. So too, that's what happened here. It's not her fault. So we understand from that if you could kill the rapist, you do it. So the Talmud says, okay, well, if you could kill a rapist, you could definitely kill a murderer. That's how the Talmud derives it, from a kal v'chomer. So,
Bechri...
Wait, is it another way around? If you can kill the person who's attempting murder, you can kill the rapist.
The pasuk equates it.
There's a pasuk that says, the pasuk with the girl who was raped by someone, it says... It is like he has just killed, like he's committed murder. So because the pasuk equates the two, so when you see that a rape woman in another verse that says she tried to scream and she wasn't saved, and that you should therefore kill the rapist, since they've already equated rapist and murder, then you kill the murderer.
Fine.
Zachin.
Okay. V'chiyon shin min adin. So he gave you the conclusion we're about to read. He skipped to the next stage. So the Gemara over there asks, you're right, that's the next line in there.
Okay.
So the Gemara begins by saying, it's a kal v'chomer. And then the Gemara says, can you really punish from a kal v'chomer? So the Gemara says, Akeshu. It's a hekesh, what you just said. Titanat be rabbi, kika. Hekesh means the pasuk aligned to halachos to tell me that they have equal status. Now, what's the difference between Hekesh and Smuchim? So, Smuchim is when I have two verses aligned to one another, but they're separate verses. So then, we had a Machlokas. Rav Yehuda says, the fact that you have two Psukim juxtaposed, that doesn't mean that there's any connection anywhere other than Devarim. Right. So, that's Smuchim. Hekesh is when I have one of two things. Either they're in the same pasuk, so then everyone agrees, you learn that, why were they put in the same pasuk? The pasuk says, because the girl could do nothing, it's like a person who gets on his friend and kills him, she yelled and there was no one there to save her. So you see, the pasuk in that same pasuk equated rape with murder. Right? That's a hekesh. It's in one pasuk. There's another type of hekesh where it's not in the same pasuk, but the pasuk equated it. Meaning the pasuk said, this is like that.
this is an example of that, because that really the pasuk, even over here, it's not like it told me any halacha about murder. It just told me this is like that, rape is like murder. And then you got to go to other psukim of murder and figure out, okay, what am I supposed to do by rape?
And that is the hekesh.
But the hekesh is the fact that the pasuk tells me they're similar. And there are many places in the Torah where it says this is like that. So one type of hekesh is when it's in the same pasuk. The other type of hekesh, that's where the pasuk itself tells me A is like B. So then I got to go look for the psukim about B to figure out how they're similar. That's hekesh. Okay, so now the Gemara says, so if the Torah told me that rape is like murder, and then the Torah says the poor girl screamed, but no one was there to save her, we understand from that whoever could have saved her should have saved her, even if it meant killing the rapist. So then, we got to go the other way around. Okay? So then what do I learn about murder? I learned that if someone's going to try to murder someone else, you could stand up and save the guy, and even if it means killing the murderer. So the hekesh, even though the pasuk began by equating rape to murder, the pasuk was also teaching me that murder is like rape. It told me the two are similar. That's the hekesh. ועוד אמרו בשני של פסחים. The Talmud further says in the second chapter of פסחים, ומה מעשר הקל אמרה תורה ולא ביארתי ממנו בתמי. If you have מייסר, which is not as stringent as the holy foods of the temple, it's מייסר, it's supposed to be kept pure, but it's not as stringent as meat from a sacrifice. And yet the Torah says you have to make a declaration. I did not consume it when it was defiled. Don't we know for sure that holy meat should not be defiled or should not be consumed in a defiled manner? Meaning, by miser it means you shouldn't defile it and consume it. You shouldn't be defiled when you consume it. Both. Bitameh means in a defileless fashion. So either you're defiled, it's defiled. So by the same token, we say the same halacha applies to kachim. Lomar, to teach us, shachel kachim bitumat basar. Anyone who eats kachim, holy foods of the temple when the meat is defiled, look at, he gets lashes because it's just like nicer. You'll tell me, but we have a rule. You cannot prohibit something out of a kal v'chomer. If the Torah wants to prohibit something and tell you, don't do that, it has to say it overtly. Hekesho, so the Talmud says, no, here it's a hekesh. Dichtiv, lo tuchal lechol bisharecha, masad gamchat roshcha v'itzarecho, v'chorot v'kachav v'tzonecha. The Talmud says, don't eat in your own gates, which is a way of saying it, don't eat it the way you eat your regular food at home, meaning in your defiled fashion, your grains and your holy foods. So the pasuk equated my grains, my ma'aser, with my holy food, with my kachim, with my sacrifices. So again, the Talmud tells me, although kal v'chomer is something I can apply on my own, but I can't punish from it, I can't warn from it. A hekesh can be used to punish, and can be used to warn, to make a new prohibition. Okay, and we're basically winding down. The Ramban is up to a punchline. But, I guess, let's read three more lines, okay? Me'elu u'mikayotze be'elu nilmod. From these examples and similar examples, you'll learn we will learn shahekesh etzlam kedavam mefurash, that Chazal treated a hekesh as though it was written explicitly. It's not like a kal v'chomer. Kal v'chomer has limitations. Hekesh does not. V'onshinbo, and that's why you could use a hekesh to derive what punishment to administer. And you could give malkot, mita, umita, mibilti kabbalah achert. Even though you have no other tradition, you only have the hekesh, that's enough of a reason to administer malkos, lashes, or misa, the death penalty. Ve'im kol zeh yesh bo tnai, And nonetheless, there is one stipulation when it comes to hekesh, and that is shadavar halamed behekesh, something that is derived in a hekesh, eino chozer umlamed behekesh b'mukdashin. We have a special rule that when it comes to kodshim, the laws of the temple, something that's derived from a hekesh cannot teach again in a new hekesh. Meaning, if I have a halacha with A, and I learn from A to B with a hekesh, now I have another hekesh that equates B with C. So I want to apply that halacha that I learned from A to C. In every area of Torah I could do it except for holy matters, matters of the temple. We have a special rule, davar alamed mekesh, eino chozer alamed behekesh. But in the rest of Torah, lemedin, lamed melamed, you could learn one thing that was derived to teach me in another derivation. As is explicit in the Talmud in Zvachan. The Ramban is telling us this rule, but Tosfos throughout Zvachan asks, well, why isn't this an exception to that rule? And he says, okay, I guess it is. So Tosfos basically tells us we don't really know when to apply this and when not. Tosfos tries for a few pages to answer why this time we do and that time we do, and finally Tosfos picks up his hand and says, well, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. We don't really know how to apply this. That meaning, we have the rule, and the Gemara sometimes will say, davar lamed mekesh, eno chozer lamed mekesh, and then at some point the Gemara seems to agree to do it, and Tosfos himself sometimes seems to not have an answer, to remain with the question, well, why? Why did you do that here? So we don't really know how to apply this rule. There are some rules like that in Shas that the Shas knew how to apply, but we don't know. We don't understand why the Shas sometimes gives us exceptions. Okay, so what we learned today? What did we do today? We did a lot, Baruch Hashem. He began by saying that Ben Sor Umar gets lashes, and that's from Gzeirah Shavah, and Maimonides agrees that if he gets lashes, that must be biblical. That was claim number one. Claim number two was that the Talmud says God prefers talking about the servants of the forefathers than our halachas, because when we need to learn a halacha about the blood of a kriti krali creature not defiling, we have to learn it from a ribui. So the Ramban says, you see, what's learned from a ribui is biblical. The Medrash says it's biblical, but the Torah didn't want to spend more than one letter to teach me this halacha. I got to figure it out from a letter, the Medrash says, while God tells me all these long pages about the story of Eliezer. So you see, the Medrash assumed that was biblical, even though it was from a ribut. He says this is true for all the 13 laws of derivation, because we say all the melachos were learned from a hekesh to the Mishkan. The melachos that are prohibited on Shabbos, they're all biblical, and they're from a hekesh. The whole concept of meleches machsheves asra Torah, that the work on Shabbos is only prohibited if it's with concentrated thought, that's also derived, that's from the 13 laws of the derivation. The Rambam took Baal Halachos Gedolos to task for the fact that he ascribe some of the 613 mitzvot to mitzvot that are derived from a ribui of the word es. It says es Hashem lokecha tira, fear Hashem your God. The word es is to encompass the sages. So Rambam takes Malos Dos to task for that. He says, well, wait a second, when it comes to chatzitza, the Talmud wants to know, well, is chatzitza halacha Moshe Messina? No, it's biblical, because it says the flesh should be in the water. Then the Talmud says, well, maybe the hair is halacha Moshe Messina. And then says, no, the hair is derived from the word es. That's also biblical. So the Ramban says, you see, that derivation from the word es are biblical, like Baal Halachos Gedolos said. So then we discuss that the only time something is a chatzitza biblically, the halacha Moshe Sinai teaches us, is when it's ruva u'makpid, when the majority of the body is encompassed, and you really don't want it there. That's when it's biblical. Then he went on to his next proof, where Rabbi Akiva says to Rabbi Yishmael, being that it says about the daughter of a kohen, uvas, that extra vav, is to encompass even if she's married, not just engaged. And Rabbi Yishmael also agrees that you have to use that ribui for something biblical. He just has a different tradition, because otherwise he would also say that even though I don't have this tradition, but I have to do something with the ribui. So he says, you see, there was no way out. He couldn't just say like the Rambam, well, it's a ribui, but it's not biblical. He didn't have that option. He had to say something biblical with that ribui.
The Ramban says you could have a riba and it won't be biblical. The Ramban says, no, you can't. You see, the Gemara didn't have that way out. It says, what does Rabbi Shmuel do with that ribui? Ben Azai says that the hekesh between a mechashefa, a witch, and a person who sleeps with an animal is to teach me that they get the same death penalty. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't accept this derivation because Rabbi Yehuda doesn't learn smuchim. He doesn't have a tradition to learn smuchim anywhere other than in the book of Devarim. And so Rabbi Yehuda says, I have to derive it from somewhere else, from something that's in a generalization. One thing comes out, it teaches me not only about itself, but about everything else. Meaning, because I have oven, you don't need two types of sorcery, that overtly, it says in the pasuk, get the death penalty of skila, that teaches me all types of sorcery, get the death penalty of skila. But he couldn't just say, well, it's a derivation, it's not biblical. Then he brought the Gemara about benching, that if you learn a Kal Vachomer from benching to the blessing before bread, then that would have to be biblical. Talmud says, well, no, you see, Baal Keri, he doesn't say the blessing before bread, only the blessing after bread. You see clearly that the blessing before bread is not biblical. The Ramban says the Gemara didn't just say like the Ramban says, well, sometimes things learned by the 13 laws of derivation are not biblical. It didn't. The Gemara assumed if it's derived, it must be biblical. He says, but the only thing is that you have stipulations. Exer Shava, you have to have a tradition. A Kal Vachomer, you could say, no, you don't have a tradition, but we don't administer punishments of death penalty or lashes from a Kal Vachomer. And his last point was that a hekesh is considered biblical. The only condition to a hekesh is that the vav alamid bekesh, you know, chazer on lamid bekesh. If you derive something with a hekesh, you can't use it to teach in another hekesh when it comes to kachim. Look at how much you guys.